everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who is waving to himself. Is that what you're doing?
You're stopping the middle of the thing.
I'm sorry. Who doesn't take it real seriously?
Yeah.
They know the drill. they've been here before.
As we're proving. But who is?
Getting no new listener.
Absolutely not. But who is less sick than you?
That is true. Congratulations on that.
You first, and then I'll find somebody else next time not as sick as.
Yeah. Are you like your full health? Your health meter is at full capacity?
Yeah. Well, I remember to take my Zyrtec.
Must be nice.
It is.
I got to set an alarm. I don't know. But I also, you know, allergies are not a new thing for me, but these Virginia, I don't know what they grow here, but I just like being wrecked. Totally wrecked. And, you know, it's not fun. People like me who can't remember to take medication are not designed for allergies. So that's what I've learned. Oh, gosh. Let's see. What are we going to talk about today?
What have you been up to all weekend? busy doing a bunch of waspy stuff, or what were you up to?
I did some waspy stuff. Thank you for asking. Yes, we did indeed. On Sunday, we thought, well, let's go to a farm. We went to Endless View Farms on Sunday, and it was really nice. They have it's as the name implies, it's a farm.
Right.
And
is it a no-kill farm, or what is it exactly?
It wasn't on Sunday. Not when we got there. We squished a lot of animals, and it was a mistake, but I hugged that baby goat a little too hard, and I pulled a real Lenny on that goat, but it loved me while it was alive. No, it was fun. Yeah, it was pretty waspy, I guess. It's a fancy farm. They've got corn mazes and pumpkin patches and sunflowers.
I think anytime you go to a farm that's not a farm, pretty waspy.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a farm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, sure.
It's in the name.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but if you go to a farm but you're not like a laborer, then that's a waspy activity.
If you drove yourself to the farm, kind of waspy, just honestly. Yeah,
that's true. If you didn't ride in the back of a pickup truck that you jumped into at a Home Depot, that's waspy. Yeah. And then after that, we thought, well, let's go get some lunch. And there's a brewery near the farm, close to our house, that we had not been to yet, called Stablecraft Brewery. And we went there, and this place was amazing. I sent you some photos. Mm-hmm. It's beautifully landscaped. There are all these fire pits outside. We're in the, you know, in the Shenandoah Valley with like a great view of the Blue Ridge Mountains in the distance. There was a guy playing a great set list on the back of this this truck bed. And he played some Johnny Cash, played some Waylon Jennings. He played some different stuff that I don't recall off the top of my head, but was very good. And beers are good. And then the girls, like, there were other kids there, so they ran out. We were there for 5 hours. We haven't gone anywhere for 5 hours since Maple was born. But we were there for 5 hours. It was great. It was great. Thank you for asking. What did you do?
Not that.
You sent me, I think, a text of misery.
Yeah, well, it was slight misery. I was still with the family, enjoying time with them, but we weren't enjoying time where we were.
But like all of you together were miserable.
Yes, we're all, yeah. So.
But you went to the Cardinal game?
Yes. Yeah, that's part of the misery. But
it's a tough year.
Yeah, it's been a tough year. And they're intent on running everybody's expectations into the ground. So.
Yeah. But hey, they're champions at that, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Indeed.
Unbeaten. Number one. And that was our weekend. That's about it, I think. Any other questions?
No, I'm all caught up.
Do you want to hear a ghost story?
Love to.
We should get into it because this is going to be potentially kind of a long one, and it is late at night.
It's a good one to start at like 10 o'clock Eastern. It's a good idea.
I'm so tired. All right, and I should say before we get started, today's story actually comes to us from a listener, Caroline Jones. Caroline Jones, longtime listener, who had sent us a couple story ideas in the past, but
this is a good one.
This is finally at long last. And she didn't just send an idea; she sent a script.
Ah, okay. Caroline's kind of breaking through here. She's like, okay. No, I get it.
She's
I know how to get on the show. Do all their work for them for a week,
and then, that is my love language. She knows it.
Caroline, just so you know, you don't have to pay the $25 for the sponsorship if you just write the entire episode for us. That also works.
But if you do want to pay $25 to have your story read online, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Oh, yeah, not turning that down.
Yeah. No, I think she saw, probably she saw Sally McGregor's tattoo and was like, I gotta step it up. And so she did. So she sent in she researched everything and did a great, and it's really, really good. I did go in and add some things, but I did not take anything out. So what we ended up with here was like a 50-50 Caroline Clayton story. All the good parts are written by Caroline. So mm-hmm. thank you so much, Caroline.
Just, I'm sorry. Filler from you.
Dragging like, yeah, it's.
Yeah. You know, dates and people's names and shit and the boring
stuff. Actually, quite a lot of that. Yeah. Oh boy. So thank you so much to Caroline. I love it when people do my work for me. That is truly my love language. So keep them coming. All right. And on that note, let's see.
Ding. Ding. Nice.
Ding.
Dong. Good job.
Nailed it. All right. The village of Herolville.
You too. Yeah. Like a week to go over this.
I haven't read through it yet at all. The village of Herolville lies in the Val d'Oise département of France, mm-hmm. about 20 miles northwest of, I think they say, Paris. Mm-hmm.
Do they also put question marks at the end of all their words, or is that
just oh, yes. Those are in the notes.
Okay.
So I'm just being faithful here. So I don't know how to pronounce Hero, I mean, any of this. Herouville.
Herouville.
Mm-hmm. So this village it's now on the outskirts of Paris, but in the 18th century, it was just a rural village, but it caught the eye of an architect named Godot.
Oh.
Now, Godot. Saw the ruins of a 16th century chateau there. Chateau, I should say. I should do it in the French. Chateau. He saw it and he decided to build a new chateau, like a bigger chateau, a better chateau. Yeah. Now, Godot's chateau had...
is this the part that you wrote? Because
but I told her when she sent it in, I was like, this is so fun. There's so many French words. I'm going to have a blast. And she said, that's actually part of the reason why I chose this story. So Godot Chateau had 57 rooms.
57 rooms?
57 rooms.
Oh.
You could have so many kids.
It's just too many.
You could just have your kids go. You wouldn't see them for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Just go explore the house, kids.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
I wonder if his kids argued, you know, like my kids always argue about wanting their own room. Like, would they argue at wanting their own, like, wing of the home?
I want my own 17 rooms.
I'm not sharing a wing with Frederick anymore. That's not happening.
Well, it's funny you say that. So it's 57 rooms divided over three wings. So only three wings in the house.
That's not very many.
No. Including 30 ornate bed chambers and numerous libraries, a kitchen, and a grand dining room. All set in 1.7 hectares of lush parkland.
Wow.
You're an engineer. What is a hectare? How does that compare to a hectare, to an acre?
It's about 3.5 acres.
Is that true?
I have no idea.
I'm going to Google that. I didn't think so. Hectares to acres. What did you say?
3.5 acres? Yeah.
1 hectare?
1 hectare.
You're closer than I would like you to be, which is... 1 hectare is 2.47 acres.
Oh, see?
Oh, okay.
I mean, I was right that it was bigger, so...
That is true, and you were pretty close. So this, the new chateau was completed in 1740, and it was immediately inhabited by aristocrats. No, aristocrats. Sorry, aristocrats. that is different. But this is where the Disney film comes from.
Right. Not the Bob Saget joke.
Oh, man. I saw, what was it, some tweet the other day where about Mark Robinson, where like the funniest thing he could possibly do is show up tomorrow at an event and just go on stage and say, "The Aristocrats." Oh man. At this point, I'm going to put in what I have decided to call a Caroline caveat, because I love alliteration. This is a note that Caroline made. The websites are weirdly unspecific about who moved in, who the aristocrats were. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it doesn't matter, because you know what happened to French aristocrats in the 1790s, right? That's right. Madame Guillotine. So they didn't really need the chateau anymore. Thank you, Caroline.
30 bed chambers suddenly opened up real quick. Mm.
Well, actually, or if you look a different way, like they needed suddenly double the bed chambers.
Okay.
Yeah, you want your head and your body. You
sure, know? Yeah, yeah.
Don't want to put them in the same bed. That's grotesque.
Yeah, I would like to buy 30 tiny beds, not much bigger than a watermelon, perhaps, covered in plastic.
Lots of saran wrap and mini tops.
Do you know?
Mini tops.
Disgusting beds.
These filth. And therefore, erotic. So in the 19th century, the chateau was used as a staging post for the riders who carried the mail between Versailles and Beauvais. Mm. And at one time, the stables of this chateau housed over 100 horses. It's a lot of horses. Big horse numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But people could also stay there. Human people could stay there.
Right.
As well. Unlike some houses we've talked about, these stables I don't think were on the first floor of the building, so it was more comfortable to stay there. And in the 1840s, a new resident moved in to the chateau.
Mm-hmm.
A 30-something Polish composer named Frédéric Chopin.
Oh.
Name one Chopin piece. Go.
Chopin's first.
Swing and a miss.
Chopin's seventh.
Okay, yes. That one does exist. Chopin was born on March 1st, 1810, in, oh boy, Zella. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm going to get there. Zella Zoa Wola.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In Poland.
Zella Zola Wola. That's how you
Zella gonna... Zoa, well, two words.
Right, sure. Yeah.
Do you obviously. Know where that word's broken? Zella Zoa Wola. Zella Zola Wola.
Mm-hmm.
Poland. Duh. His father, Nicholas Chopin, was a Frenchman from Lorraine who had emigrated to Poland in 1787. Now, Nicholas married a woman named shit, Justia.
Mm-hmm. Justia.
Sure. No. Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe uh-huh. Justia. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's spelled just yeah.
Yeah.
Just yeah. Yeah. Justia. Last name Krzyzanowska. Krzyzanowska.
Mm-hmm.
Justia Krzyzanowska.
Yeah. Yeah. She lives on. She's up in the northwest side of Chicago now. Pretty sure.
Yeah, pretty sure. She loves them hot dogs, huh? When he was 6 months old, when Chopin was, Frederick was, the family moved to Warsaw, which is much easier to pronounce, and I am very grateful to them for moving.
Tired of missing out all that mail, like somebody misspelling, like moving one Z in their town name, and all of a sudden nothing shows up.
I didn't even know this thing had a Z. It doesn't pronounce as a Z. Why are there two Z's? Now, Chopin's father played flute and violin. His mother played piano, so it's a musical family. And I'm sure you are aware, he was a child prodigy when it comes to music and composition and such. Now, I will say he's not like as child a prodigy as some folks. He's out there doing like concertos at the age of four like Mozart was.
Mm-hmm.
But he's okay. It's fine. He's better. He's way better at piano than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good.
Mm. Do you think his parents like gave him a bunch of shit about not being Mozart this whole time? Or
I would. I mean,
yeah.
It seems right. If I know one thing about Polish parents. Let's see. But he's good. So he's obviously, he's a composer. Let's see. Anyway, so he leaves Poland at the age of 20. Mm-hmm. He's had enough of Poland. And he travels around Europe, and he settles in Paris the next year. Now, Paris at this point in history is it's a pretty big hotspot. Chopin he's already pretty well known by this point too, for all his good, mm-hmm. good musics and stuff. Mm-hmm. I should note, we're not going to talk about his compositions. Like, we're not going to get that deep into his history. Like, he's famous obviously because he's good at stuff. He's good at mm-hmm. music stuff.
Right.
And that's great, but that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about just the ghost stuff. So while he's doing good music stuff, he gets set up in the artistic circles of Paris. And this is where he meets a bunch of notable artists, but one in particular who becomes a very good friend of his, a young man named Franz Liszt.
Oh.
Also a popular composer. And your favorite movement of his, Patrick, what would you say?
It's called Listomania.
I think that's actually right. Oh, man. Now, Chopin he's a bit of a tortured soul. Here's a quote about his creative process. It was described as, quote, an inspiration, its painstaking elaboration, sometimes amid tormented weeping and complaining, with hundreds of changes in concept, only to return finally to the initial idea. Which in a lot of ways sounds like how I write books.
I was going to say that it's been most of my jobs.
Yeah.
No, change that. No, change that. No. Okay, now change it back. Ah, perfect. Yes, just that way.
This is how you interact with Disney mm-hmm. on a Absolutely. Daily basis.
Yep. At the end of the day, they're like, fuck, just put the mouse back in it. Okay, I started with the mouse,
but that's okay. You know. That's all right. It's fine. Speaking of Disney, I saw today this... this concept video of a new roller coaster going in somewhere that's not a Disney property.
Oh, is it the one with the tilting track?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Where is that?
I think
Cedar Point.
Yeah, I think it's Cedar Point.
It is Cedar Point.
Yep.
And I thought, this is better than anything Patrick's ever done. It's terrifying. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying because you tilt, which is scary, but then you just hang for a bit.
Right.
And it's like straight totally down. Vertical.
Right. Yeah, the entire track, like you go up, it's kind of like on Everest, mm-hmm. Where you go up and then you're suspended right at the end of the tracks, except the tracks break behind you and then you tilt forward and then go straight down.
Yeah, on Everest you go backward, and that's cool.
Correct.
On this one, you go mm-hmm. forward more,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and that's very scary. Now, as an engineer, I have to ask you, is that safe?
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, we don't do them that way for a reason. Yeah. Have you ever seen one do that before?
No.
Anytime you see a roller coaster nowadays, it's like, you were going to do something that's never been done before. Everyone's ears kind of perk up a little bit like, oh, really? You know, we've done everything so far. Now you're going to do something we haven't done.
So this is not a good time to go to Ohio, is what you're saying?
I'd let a few people go on. Maybe like some really tall people, maybe some really fat people, and then just kind of see what happens after that.
Yeah. Or maybe some politicians. Let J.D. Vance go and take that ride and see what happens. All right. Anyway, this has nothing to do with Chopin. So in 1836, Chopin becomes engaged to a beautiful artist and pianist named Maria Wodzinska. Mm-hmm. Maria Wodzinska.
Desperate to hear that last name. She's like, your last name again? Chopin. Oh, fuck. I can spell that. God. Jeez.
So Maria's father now objected to this match because Chopin was in poor health.
How old is he at this point?
He's 18. It's 1836. He was born in one second. Born in 1810. Mm-hmm. He's 26.
Right, but he's in poor health.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, he's just barely getting by.
Well,
in his mid 20s.
He's what we call a weak boy.
Mm, okay. Very pale.
He's got brittle bones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's very pale. He's got mm-hmm. sad feet.
Mm-hmm.
I assume
only half of his teeth. Well. Yeah.
Yep. Now we will later come to learn he had tuberculosis.
Not all fun and games. There is a little bit of tuberculosis in this case,
but they didn't know this at this point. This point, he's just a sad boy.
Yeah, he's just weak. Of course, makes sense.
He's a weak, sad boy. Turns out he's pretty sick. Mm. So anyway, so Maria's father is like, I don't think so. He's a brittle boy.
Did you see what he coughed up on the floor? It looked like his liver. I don't want that boy coming around no more.
A sign of real weakness when you cough up your organs. So Maria is forbidden to marry him. Now Chopin doesn't take this news very well. He's upset. Mm-hmm. He's sad. His heart is broken, etc.
Mm-hmm. His lungs are also.
His lungs they're depressed.
Broken. Yeah,
they're. I mean, depressed in like the smashed sense. yeah, and his heart also broken, but again, once again, in a literal sense. Mm-hmm. But in October, October 24th, 1836, while Chopin is just in the depths of misery, his good friend, Franz Liszt, of Listomania fame, mm-hmm. invites Chopin along to a salon.
Ah. You know what
a salon is?
It's like a bathhouse.
It's not.
It is.
Nope.
No, okay, that's fine. What is it? It's like a haircutting place?
It is now. Right. Back in the day, a salon is like where you would go to engage in art with some folks. You'd sit around in the room and you'd be like, I have a piece of music that I'm working on. Do you want to hear it? And you'd be like, I have a new thing I can recite. Would you like to hear me recite this thing?
This is a bathhouse.
I guess in hindsight, that's maybe right.
They're probably wearing clothes in your version, but I mean.
But in my head, yeah. Oh boy. It's getting real sexy. So Liszt invites Chopin to a salon that is being held at Liszt's mistress's house. And he's very open about having a mistress. Mm-hmm. C'est la vie. I guess. And it's here that Frédéric Chopin meets a woman named Amandine Lucille Aurore Dupont de Francouville.
Wow.
Now, she goes by the name Aurora.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Or Aurora. It's probably actually more...
Is that
more
an acronym, or I don't know what that... Yeah.
It's her third of seven names? Third of six names?
That's where you put the good one anyway.
And put it in there. It's like it's a little mystery. Like you're unwrapping the package.
Yeah.
You're going to peel away the first name and the last name and the second name and the second to last name, and then you're going to find, Aurora. So... Aurora was born on July 1st, 1804, in Paris. As a girl, she lived with her grandmother at the family manor in Nohant, which is 300 kilometers from Paris. We all know how far 300 kilometers is, so no need to even ask.
Right.
How many miles do you think that is?
It's 125 miles.
Gosh, no. We were so much closer before.
175 miles.
186 miles.
Yeah.
The fact that you know that makes you think maybe you are a European plant. You're just slow paying this whole podcast.
I'm a European plant. Slow growing and invasive.
Speaking of invasive, by the way. We are now discovering the joys of spotted lantern flies.
Oh, I've heard those are fun.
Well, and it's they're fucking suddenly, like, as of like the last 5 days, they are everywhere. Mm. They are everywhere. And as you know, we were in Chicago, we had the cicada swarm.
Right.
When we moved to Virginia, we were like, well, at least we'll get away from like being swarmed by bugs all the time. And there are no cicadas here at all. It's awesome. It's great. And then, as of last week, suddenly we are fucking dive bombed by spotted lantern flies, and it's terrible. And it's weird. But the nice thing about it is, if you read anything about them, you'll read they are super invasive and they eat like all the vegetation. Mm-hmm. And so every single like authority on you know insects and on agriculture or whatever is like, when you see one, destroy it at all costs. Do whatever you have to do. So it's like you get this like free pass to kind of smush it. Which is, like it's cathartic. Mm-hmm.
But right, we need the smushery with you. Right.
We have this blow up black cat. We started rolling out Halloween a little early this year. Mm-hmm. And so we have a big blow up black cat outside our house. And I don't know why, for some reason, these lantern flies love the nylon of this cat. And we go out there every day we go out there. There are like 20 spotted lantern flies like on the cat. And so the new routine is we'll go out in the morning and we mm-hmm. knock over the cat and they all just fall over. They're not good at flying away. They mm-hmm. will like kind of flutter to the ground. Yeah. And then there's this 20 spotted lanternflies on the ground for you to kill. And that's what we do.
So you and the girls like a...
Yeah, it's our new routine.
Like a whacking day, you know, exhibition, just kind of walk around.
Wouldn't call it whacking day. That's something else. This house.
Just walk around and just grind bugs into the dust. I like that.
Yeah. Pretty good. We got quite a kill count going on, mm-hmm. and we're doing it for the Earth.
Exactly,
which is the best part. Anyway, how did we get on that topic? I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, so Aurora grows up in Nohant, 300 kilometers from Paris, 186 miles. In 1821, her grandma dies, and now Aurora inherits the manor.
Oh.
So she's king of
the castle.
Castle. That's better. Yeah. King of the castle. That makes a lot more sense. Now, Aurora meets a man named Cachemir Dudevant. And they are married. They have two children. But after a decade, that marriage dissolves. And then Aurora begins being very scandalous with men.
Oh, okay.
She takes on many lovers, most of them male.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them. In the early 1830s, Aurora begins to write, like in earnest. She's probably always like written stuff, but like she's writing books. All of a sudden. Now, her lover at this time was a man named Jules Sandeau. And they collaborated on stories, on story collections. And they would sign these stories because they both worked on them. Instead of just signing Jules Sandeau, they signed them Jules Sand.
Okay.
So now her name is not in here at all. But his name is in here a little less. So I guess that's feminism.
We're just going to use 80% of my name. And that's kind of like, you know, your name.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And like basically. That empty 20%, mm-hmm. that's you, babe.
Mm-hmm.
That's you. Now, it quickly becomes obvious that she's very talented. She's an incredibly good writer. In 1832, she writes a novel all her own called Rose et Blanche. And she publishes it because women are not really able to publish things mm-hmm. at this time, or at least not mm-hmm. taken very seriously when they do. So she takes on a masculine pseudonym and she publishes it under the name George Sand. Now, I will say that French writers don't really tend to do terribly well in America ever. So that name may not be familiar, but George Sand, Aurora, would go on to be she's a very famous author, actually. She would write quite a few very important French novels. She was incredibly popular. By the age of 27, she was Europe's most popular writer of either gender.
Ooh, wow.
In the 1830s and 40s, at least in England, she was more popular than Victor Hugo and more popular than Balzac.
Yeah. She's probably like, finally, more popular than Balzac.
Got it with the Balzac. So, as you will remember, I'm sure, in our Toronto trip, there was a coffee shop in the train station called Balzac's. And one of the guys came to the house and they're like, I saw a coffee shop. It was called Balzac. It was Chad or Will. I don't know. One of them. And I was like, well, I'm sure it's named after the writer.
Yeah.
They're like, never heard of him, but it's called Balzac. Okay. All right. Very cool. Isn't there like a plate, like a toy when we were little called the Balzac?
I would have remembered that one. I don't know.
Oh, I think there was. No, I think children, toy, ball. Yeah. How do we spell this? Yeah, Balzac. B-A-L-L-Z-A-C-K.
Balzac?
Yeah.
How did that ever survive?
BALZAC balloon ball. Do you want to see the commercial for it?
I got lots of time.
This is just our like hangout time. Let's I can't share audio, but you can watch the video. Did you never have one of these?
I doubt it. I mean, we didn't really have toys growing up. We had, you know, sticks and rocks and stuff.
Now I'll say the one that we had didn't have a person inside of it. That's new. Yeah, it's like balloon balls. You'd blow up and you would bonk them around. And they were called Balzacs, which in hindsight is a crazy name. Well, this is the Balzac.
It's just a ball? Just a ball.
Well, there's like a balloon inside a ball. There's like a balloon inside of like a nylon thing.
Right. Yeah.
But like this, so this, and this guy, ours didn't have a guy inside it. That's right, different. Yeah, that's for the commercial.
But this is just a ball. That's all I'm saying. This is just a ball.
No. It's different. It's Balzac. Because you'd put, again, there's a balloon inside a nylon ball.
Right. And that's different from, I'm not. It's different from ball. I'm seeing why the product struggled a little bit.
Okay.
To differentiate yourself.
This has gone off the rails, and I'm sorry I brought it up. So George Sand is an incredibly popular author. And, here's a fun anecdote to kind of round out her character. In 1800, the police chief of Paris issued an order that required women to apply for a permit in order to wear male clothing.
Oh, okay.
For, I assume, reasons. George Sand obtained a permit to wear men's clothing in 1831, justifying it as being less expensive and far sturdier than the typical dress of a noblewoman at the time. Hmm. She was also considered scandalous for smoking in public.
Hmm. Real man's man.
My face is so red now. Feels unhealthy. Now, as a famous artist, Sand runs in the fine arts of Paris, and she hears about a talented composer named Frédéric Chopin. And so Sand, who is friends with Franz Liszt, tells him, "You have to introduce me."
Hmm.
So it is that when Liszt invites Chopin to his salon, he is setting him up, and it's on that night that Sand and Chopin meet. Now, Chopin immediately takes note. He was, quote, initially repulsed by Sand. And he asked Liszt, quote, "What an unattractive person La Sand is. Is she really a woman?" So,
"I have checked her permit and everything does appear to be on the up and up, but she smells quite foul."
So this is not off to a great start. But we're going to skip ahead about a year into the future. Now, after about a year, the relationship with Maria is officially over. Her dad says, "Absolutely not. It's done. You're such a sweet, frail-bodied boy." Yep. And eventually, Chopin comes around to Sand, and they start hanging out.
Hmm.
And by the end of June 1838, they had become lovers.
Gross.
Yep. Now, I will say, just to be fair to Sand, here's something she said about him at the time. Quote, "I must say I was confused and amazed at the effect this little creature had on me. I have still not recovered from my astonishment, and if I were a proud person, I should be feeling humiliated and having been carried away." So I think these kids are going to make it.
Yep.
Oh, man. So it's during their torrid little love affair that Chopin and Sand move into the Chateau de Harauville. Back to our house here. Mm-hmm. Now, their time at the chateau was probably not particularly happy. They argued a lot, and their relationship was kind of on again, off again. They spent a lot of time arguing about money and also about Sand's children. They were said to have some pretty spectacular arguments at the Chateau de Harauville. And those arguments, though, pretty much came to an end when Chopin died of tuberculosis in 1849. And he was 39 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh. His only regret is having tuberculosis.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good one. How does it feel to be older than the... you know, than one of the great masters of a fine art form.
I mean, I feel like if I had gotten tuberculosis, I would have died a lot earlier than 39. I probably wouldn't have made it more than 10
minutes.
Much
smaller, much weaker boy. Much, for sure. Well, later in the 19th century, Vincent van Gogh painted a painting of the chateau. And when he died, he was buried nearby. So his grave is not too far from this mm-hmm. building. So that kind of lent it some more kind of, I don't know, fame for a little while, but mm-hmm. after Van Gogh died, the chateau really fell into disrepair and it sat there for decades. No one loved it. And eventually one wing was damaged by a fire and the whole thing just totally goes to ruin. Hmm. But then more than 100 years later, in 1962, a French composer by the name of Michel Monge bought the old chateau and he turned it into a family home and a personal recording studio.
Okay.
Apparently had
a 57-room recording studio / family home? Sure.
There are 55 recording studio rooms and then three, a bedroom and a bathroom and a kitchen.
Anytime I hear about a house that has like an unnatural number of rooms in it, I always wonder if I would turn it into like a cabin in the woods type facility where
based on who's coming here, we're going to send you in a different wing.
Right.
And oh boy, have fun.
That one's got the merman in it. That's my favorite. This one is all locust beasts. This one is just a dark cloud. We don't know what its name is.
And he won't tell us, but he's very angry. So let's see. So yes, so apparently the building has extraordinary acoustic qualities, which soon become very well known throughout the industry, the music industry. And so after a few years, he opens it up as a residential studio where artists can come and they can stay, they can record their music, they can sleep, they can live their lives. He names the studio portion of this building the George Sand. It also came to be known as Strawberry Studios.
Hmm.
But the name by which it is most well known was given to it by an American musician named Rex Foster. You've heard of Rex Foster?
Doesn't sound familiar.
Me neither. Could have been too well known. But Rex was the first musician to actually record an album at Chateau de Helville. And while he was there, Rex nicknamed the manor the Honky Chateau. And this is the name by which it is most well known today. During the 1970s, the studio was used by some of the biggest names in rock and pop. I mean, for example, in 1971, Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead had been due to play at a free festival nearby, but it was called off on account of rain. And they were staying in the chateau and they decided instead they will put on an impromptu concert in the gardens, which actually we have a video of.
Hmm.
Now, again, I got to fix my computer. You can't hear this, so it's going to be pretty useless, but, here's some cool video of that.
Yeah.
That's a Grateful Dead.
It's a Grateful Dead playing in somebody's backyard.
Yep. And that is all the utility we are going to get out of that video. So they did, and then they recorded there as well. Here's a fun fact. No, here's a fun fact.
Wham!
There it is. About that, the local mayor agreed to lend the local fire brigade as security for that particular gig. And this was the 70s in France, so even though they were on duty, the firefighters were like, well, we can have, like, one drink.
Yeah.
unfortunately, the wine they drank was laced with LSD. and many of the firefighters were later seen cavorting naked in the swimming pool.
Oh.
Man.
Do you know where the safest place to be from fire is? It's in the middle of the swimming pool with nothing burnable on you.
Listen, we are all professionals, yeah, and this is the best place to be.
I can see none of you speak French, so I'm just going to show you what I'm talking about.
The Grateful Dead, by the way, were such nice guys that they tidied up the garden before they left, which is very sweet. Other artists who visited and recorded at the Honky Chateau were included Elton John, who actually recorded an album there called Honky Chateau. He also recorded the albums Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player, which I guess exists. Mm-hmm. And then one you probably have heard of, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Oh, yeah, I do know that one. Mm-hmm.
Other bands who have recorded here include Pink Floyd, The Rolling Stones, Canned Heat, Cat Stevens, Iggy Pop, David Bowie, Fleetwood Mac, The Bee Gees, and more. So things are going really great at the Honky Chateau. Except several of the musicians who recorded there reported ghostly experiences while they were staying at the chateau.
Interesting. Did they also try the wine?
They did. They were like, this is great. I love it. Why is that guy's head falling off?
Into that little bed over there. Why is that little bed over there?
Thank God we have that and the saran wrap and the tarps. When Elton John and his lyricist, Bernie Taupin, were there, according to Taupin's autobiography, which is called Scattershot, Life, Music, Elton, and Me, they were witness to some strange events. Here's a quote from that book. The fire ignited by itself, and a cat appeared out of nowhere, freaked out and looking like it had been electrocuted. Then the lights went out. Retrieving candles and matches from my bathroom, I noticed that the mirror above the sink had been scratched from the inside out.
Ooh.
Another quote here. While thunder rolled and lightning crashed as if on cue, we did what any other group of petrified pals would do in these circumstances and piled into one bedroom and locked the door. Getting pretty sexy for Elton and company.
That was Elton's idea, by the way. It's pretty obvious.
Quote continues, this is where things get hazy.
Oh.
With the passing of a fitful night, some were convinced they heard voices, and some complained of being tugged or tapped on the shoulder by invisible hands. Elton, show us your hands. Oh, man. When it came time to listen back to the tracks they had recorded in the chateau, Taupin claimed there were, quote, audible moans and groans from the spirits. Many people have speculated that the ghosts are those of Frédéric Chopin and George Sand themselves. Mm-hmm. During David Bowie's time at the chateau, where he recorded Low with Tony Visconti and Brian Eno, the three claimed to have felt supernatural haunting experiences, and Visconti stated, quote, there was certainly some strange energy in that chateau. On the first day, David took one look at the master bedroom and said, I'm not sleeping in there. He took the room next door. The master bedroom had a very dark corner right next to the window, ironically, that seemed to just suck light into it. It was colder in that corner, too.
Hmm.
I took the bedroom because I wanted to test my meditation abilities. I never admitted this before. I had read that Buddhists in Tibet meditated all night in a graveyard to test their level of fear, no fear. It felt like it was haunted as all fuck. But what could Frederick and George really do to me? Scare me in French? I loved the look of the room, so I decided to spend one night there. If something happened, I planned to shout so loud I'd wake up the village. Eno claimed he was awakened early in the morning with someone shaking his shoulder. When he opened his eyes, no one was there. Ricky Gardner, who's a guitarist, offers a theory about Brian Eno's eerie encounters. Quote, I can confirm that Brian had a bad cough from time to time. He was staying in the room that Chopin had used. Chopin died of consumption You may make of that what you like.
So Frederic Chopin gave Brian Eno tuberculosis.
I think that's right.
I mean, it's at least an exposure. That counts as something, you know.
That's literally how it passes. So makes a lot of sense.
That's a shame.
I think he got better, though.
Yeah, famously recovered from tuberculosis.
The Bee Gees, for what it's worth, seem to have been less bothered by the ghosts. And they were more bothered by the pornographic films, which had also been made at the chateau. Now, this was a line, obviously, Caroline included about the pornographic films. And I will tell you, she did include a link, which I was so hesitant to click.
I'm going to say, like, you've shared so many things in the chat so far, and you're not going to share that?
I'm sorry. You want it? Okay.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Well,
yeah, this is your like work Zoom account, so you can put whatever link you want in here.
This is part of the problem. Now I did turn on a VPN and then click the link just in case. Now it's not porn.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry to say.
It's fine.
It led to a blog about the Bee Gees.
Oh.
Which is the opposite of porn. But it included this paragraph. That staircase had other claims to fame. There's a staircase in the house, mm-hmm. I assume. Staircase had other claims to fame, according to Robin Gibb, Barry Gibb's brother. Mm-hmm. This is a quote from Robin. You know, years ago, there were so many pornographic films made at the chateau. The staircase where we wrote How Deep Is Your Love, Staying Alive, all those songs... was the same staircase where there had been 6 classic lesbian porno scenes filmed.
I do love that they're disgusted by it, but they do know that there are 6.
They know exactly how many.
are there little plaques on the banister or something like that?
Yeah, every like bottom of the stairs.
Yeah.
Here's who orgasmed here. Here's who orgasmed here.
Did you know Booty Duty 2 through 4 were all filmed right here? Did you know that?
Oh man. So the blog post continues. I was watching a movie one day called Kinky Women of Bourbon Street. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden,
just one day sudden, in the afternoon.
Yeah,
as you know, comes on channel 11. What am I gonna do, turn it off?
And all of a sudden there's this chateau, and I said, it's the chateau. These girls, these dodgy birds, are having a scene on the staircase that leads from the front door up to the studio. There were dildos hanging off the stairs and everything. I thought, God, we wrote Night Fever there.
And finally, the inspiration for that song begins to solidify.
It all came together. It all came together. Anyway, the studio got into financial difficulties and eventually was abandoned and fell into disrepair once again. In 2013, the chateau was put up for sale with an asking price of 1.29 million pounds. No, euros. Mm-hmm. Sorry, euros. Needing an estimated 300,000 euros renovations. She's
worse.
Still on camera.
It's worse.
Yeah. let's see. In 2015, 3 passionate musicians named Jean Taxi, Thierry Guarancino, and Stephanie Machi, probably, bought it with the mission of reviving that space, and it reopened in 2020 once again as a residential recording studio, so you can go if you would like and be haunted by the ghosts of Frederic Chopin and George Sand. Ooh. And porno.
And as many as 6 thrilling docuseries.
And truly moving, wonderful, well-shot docuseries. And that's the story of the Honky Chateau. Oh, do you want to see a picture of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, little nudge for folks to go watch the YouTube if they want.
Oh, that is an interesting building.
57 rooms.
kind of monolithic in the front. You know, like a big...
It's weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I like this. I like this quite a bit.
Do you?
It's got a lot. It's got a very like compound type feel to it.
It's very compoundy.
Yeah, it's very compoundy.
It's very David Koresh.
Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, that's it. So, and yeah, it's open for business. If you want to go, you want to check it out. You'll get haunted by two of the greats, really, Chopin and Sand. I mean, if you're gonna be haunted by mm-hmm. by some ghosts. That's a great duo. Mm-hmm.
Make sure you do as much research on all the wonderful art that was recorded there as well, just so you know, kind of what the landmarks are. You want to know
the whole range of possibilities.
Yeah. Which handrail not to touch.
And I will just say again, it's called Kinky Women of Bourbon Street. Dare I Google it on my work computer? No, I do not. Hey, your computer is yours, right? You own your computer.
I share it with a lot of people that probably aren't interested in watching.
Turn on a VPN and see what Kinky Women of Bourbon Street's all about. Look, do you love this podcast or not? Do you want to help our listeners or not?
Maybe next time. I'll do some research for next week.
What a prude. No, you won't.
I'll come back with a report for
next privately. All right. Well, that is the story of the Honky Chateau. Hope you all liked it very much. The notes this week were taken mostly by Caroline Jones, but also a bit by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes this week were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media manager is Kai Valonis. And hey, we've had a blast here. And listen, if you haven't had a chance yet, check out Ghost Plus. Go do 1 month. See if you like it. If you don't like it, you can just never come back. But I think you're going to like it. It's a lot of really, really fun bonus content over at Ghost Plus. So go to isthisaghost.com, click on the Ghost Plus link, and check it out. It's pretty weird over there. Patrick, what's your face doing right now? You're looking up. Are you looking at porn right now?
I'm not.
We're working.
I'm in incognito mode.
How's it looking?
It's on YouTube.
How's the staircase?
It's quite good.
Okay, well,
Patrick, I'll shoot you a link in the morning. I'll timestamp you some links in the morning. It'll be fine.
Better do it right now, actually. It's before while Aaron's sleeping. this, I guess, has been our show. And Patrick's going to go. He's busy. So, you know, go do good stuff out there. And
definitely don't get tuberculosis.
Please don't.
Not even a little.
Always.
Not even as a goof. Yeah, as a goof.
Because if you do, it's almost certain you will end up as our next topic on Is This a Ghost?